Welcome back to another episode of On Life and Being Human. I'm your host, Catherine Colleen, and this is the show where we go more in depth into the articles on the website at CatherineColleen.com or KOABD.com. We'll take it to the same place and we answer your questions. If you have a question, you can send it in at the community page at the website, or you can send it to questions@KOABD.com. And I will write you back and use your question on the show. If you want to remain anonymous, just let me know. So today we're talking about the importance of cultivating boredom. And this came up because when I'm on travel, I do not check headlines. I do not track the stock market. I don't check email. No, I don't. Not at all. And I avoid social media like the plague. And the reason I do that is because travel at the moment is a rare treat. And I don't want to miss out on the experience. And I don't want to miss out on the immersion and the lessons that a particular town and the people in it may have for me. So I don't want to miss out on feeling the connection to these people and this place and the way it can teach me about myself and about my world. I don't want to miss any of that. So I cut off all the rest of it. I give myself full permission to just cut off everything else. And so when I travel, what I'm doing there is I'm cultivating boredom. And you think, you're traveling, how can it get boring? Well, I'll end up sitting in a coffee shop with no phone. Yeah, I take it that far. You should try it. It's liberating. Leave your phone at home. It's a crazy idea. It works amazingly. So I'll be sitting there with no phone. I'm forced to really consider the big questions. Or maybe just to enjoy an empty mind, immersed in the moment. Or to be bored, not really knowing what will come to me next. I'll just sit there with a coffee and a journal and a pen. Old school, I know. And, you know, many good articles have been written about how boredom prompts creativity and the need to cultivate boredom for creative purposes. But we also need boredom, I would suggest, that is quiet time without anything else to occupy our senses. We need that to allow us to consider the bigger questions and more importantly, the bigger answers that ultimately forward our development. So if you're working your way through the roadmap, working your way through these stages of finding this beautiful integrated life and complete connection to every aspect of yourself and your life, that's a lot of work. It takes time, it takes effort, and it takes boredom. It takes sitting there with nothing else stimulating your senses. It takes sitting there without your phone on, without your phone in front of you, and doing the work. You need to be bored. So we need the boredom to consider the big questions and, more importantly, the big answers that we know are right in front of us. And sometimes we avoid boredom because we don't want to face these questions or because we already know the answer and we don't want to face that and we don't know how to proceed or we're too scared to proceed. And so we just avoid it and we fill up our time with busyness. And I get it. Your time's already pretty full of, you gotta go to work, raising kids and maintaining a house and getting the grocery shopping done and so on and so forth. And the car needs a new tire and so on. And yes, these things all take your time, but there are a lot of things that you insert into your day that don't necessarily need to be there. How many times are you bored and you just pick up your phone and go check social media? The newest version of iOS actually has some tools to alert you as to how much you do that. It's kind of interesting to see it. That's like our gut reaction, right? Get bored, grab the phone. Get bored, go online. Fart around on social media. What are you avoiding? See, headlines and social media feeds and continuous email checks and so on are a great way to avoid yourself and to avoid the reality of your current situation. It's like a rat clicking away for a dopamine pellet. We instinctively reach for our phones instead of reaching for our journals or our books or our guitars or our meditation pillows or anything that even is slightly creative or constructive. Why do we do that? Because we're either avoiding the question, or we're avoiding the answer, or we're avoiding having to take the next step on the answer. So here's the thing. I cultivate boredom when I travel because I see those days as rare and not to be missed. But shouldn't every day be seen as rare and not to be missed? Why do we treat them like they're disposable when we're never going to get them back again? We must cultivate space and time to be in the moment, to think, and to be bored. Or at minimum, we need to replace the compulsion to reach for our phones with a compulsion of some other type. So instead of reaching for your board and you go and you reach for your phone, instead, reach for a book. Or take a deep breath. Or look around you mindfully. Notice what's going on in the room. Or reach for a musical instrument, or a journal, or a sketchbook, or some other creative outlet. Or interact with your pet, or a person, or a plant. Or, when you're ready, face the questions, face the answers, and face what it is you need to do next, and do that. See, when I travel, epiphanies, they just come like rain, but it is not the travel that makes it happen. It's the boredom that I give myself permission to cultivate in that environment. It is the mental space to think and the willingness to face the answers to big questions. And the travel helps, being in a new place around new people out of the normal routine. It has a great utility, but I could just as easily zone out in any city on my favorite diet of headlines and social media feeds and incessant email checks and miss the opportunity to forward my understanding of myself and my understanding of humanity and my skill set to help others. So here's my question for you today. What do you reach for when you're bored? Is it your phone? Could you reach for something else that would forward you a little bit more quickly towards where you want to be? What reality do you need to face? What question do you need to face? Or is it an answer? Or is it the next step that you're avoiding? How can you cultivate some time and space today to let the answers and the action come? Today. I don't care. 30 minutes, 15 minutes. I don't care. Today. That's a heavy one for today. Heavy dose of reality there. And with that, I want to look at an audience question. And this is a good one. This comes from a young man in Virginia, asking, He says, life seems like a struggle right now. And I don't know why. And how do I know if I just need to be patient or if this is an actual struggle? As in a sign that I'm going down the wrong path. And this is a really good question. This is a really good question because we know that when we are taking action that moves us away from our purpose in this life, we'll get the signals because life will feel like a struggle. And when life feels like a struggle, when you're trying to make something happen, it's just not happening. It could be a sign that path is not for you, that you need to be somewhere else doing something else. That whatever this task is you're trying to make happen, it's just not happening. That you need to move on. That the universe has a different plan for you. And that's true. Although sometimes, what if it's that we just need to be patient? Or that we need to persevere? Right? Because sometimes patience is the lesson. And sometimes perseverance is the lesson. And these are good things. And maybe we just need to learn to be patient, or maybe we just need to learn to not give up. Right? If Thomas Edison gave up after the first 9,000 tries, we would not have light bulbs. But he didn't give up. So how did he know the difference between, you know, when should I stop? Should I stop after attempt number 12,000? Well, thank God he at least went to about 10,001, because that's when he got a light bulb that worked. So what's the difference between needing to be patient or needing to persevere and it actually being a struggle and a sign that you should take another path? And I thought about this quite a lot. And it's not a matter of, have you tried three times and it didn't work? It's a matter of how many attempts would be normal or expected for the kind of thing that you're doing, right? We hear about people who've written books, you know, J.K. Rowling and others, who got turned down an enormous number of times before they found a publisher that wanted to take their book, and then they ultimately became huge successes. We've all heard those kinds of stories. Should they have called it a struggle after the third or fourth publisher turned it down? Apparently not, right? Their perseverance was well rewarded. But in an industry like publishing, you expect dozens, if not hundreds, of rejections before you get an acceptance. So that would be normal. So I would not give up and say, oh, well, this is a struggle. This book is not meant to be. I wouldn't do that so quickly. For Thomas Edison, inventing new technology is rampant with failure that gives you new direction. You learn something and that leads you to the next thing to try. And so that perseverance is well worth it. That is not struggle. That is standard procedure, standard process. So I would put a few tests on it. And let me give you a different example. Let's suppose you're at one university and you're applying to transfer to a different university. And you apply and they turn you down, and you apply and they turn you down, and you apply and they turn you down. Let's say 3-4 times they've turned you down. Well, what's normal? Is that normal to be turned down 3 or 4 times? No. In that environment, that is not normal. After probably the second time, you would say, wow, this is really a struggle. That other university must not be where I should be. Let me go put my time and my effort and my energy into guiding myself towards where I do need to be. So if the number of tries is abnormal, you've tried more than average and it's still not working out, then I think you could classify it as a struggle, and that maybe you need to investigate a different avenue. alternately, if you're not learning anything from your attempts. You know, Edison learned something from every time that a light bulb design didn't work. And J.K. Rowling learned something every time her book was turned down. She learned something that made the next approach better. And so if you're not learning anything from these attempts, and if you are putting forth more attempts than are normal for whatever you're doing, then I would say this is a struggle. And your river is trying to tell you something, and your river is trying to tell you to stop swimming against the river and let go and start flowing with your river. Start putting your energy and your effort somewhere where it can be. So when you're flowing with your river and or with the universe and with God and however you want to think of it, and you're working towards your purpose, life will just kind of flow. And when we say that it just sort of flows, we don't mean that things happen instantly, but they seem to just happen in succession and move you towards your goal. That doesn't mean it will be fast. It just means it will be relatively easy, relative to what most people deal with in that industry or environment. But it certainly doesn't mean it will be fast, especially if your goal involves getting lots of other people to work together. This can be very difficult, and you have to be very patient. But that doesn't mean it's a struggle. Okay, so to recap, it's a struggle. It's most likely a struggle if you're not learning anything from these iterations, or you're attempting this far more than is normal and it's still not working out. That's what I would call a struggle. But if you're learning from your attempts, and or you have not tried this more than normal, then I wouldn't necessarily call it a struggle. When it comes down to it, in your gut, you know whether or not you're struggling. You know that there'll be this sense of flailing when you sit with the feeling deep down in your gut. What does it feel like? It's going to feel like flailing and stressing, you know, like you're swimming against the river. Deep down, you know. You know if you just need to be patient or if this is a struggle. But there's a few empirical methods there that you can use to help reinforce what you already know. All right, that's enough for today. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. If you have questions, please put them in on the community page or send them to questions@koabd.com. And as always, my very best wishes for you as you seek complete connection in your life. Purna Asati.